This is the Thriving Dentist Show with Gary Takacs, where we help you develop your ideal dental practice, one that provides personal, professional, and financial satisfaction.
Welcome to another edition of the Thriving Dentist Show. I'm Gary Takacs, your show host. Very excited to have a special guest on the show, my friend from Australia, David Moffat. David, how are you?
Gary, I'm great. Good morning to you.
You know, we mentioned this in the prep for the show, David, but you are my first guest from Oz, from Down Under. Welcome. We're so excited to have you on the show.
Yeah, it's. I can't believe that I'm your first, Gary, because I know your show has been going so long. But I'm proud to be the first from Australia. And funnily enough, as we were mentioning beforehand, I'm actually calling you before I fly home to Australia, and I'm in the city of your birth,
that's
Cleveland,
right.
Ohio.
That's right. You know, we were able to connect. You were here, of course, for a variety of events, including the SCN Speaking Consulting Network conference last weekend up in Portland. And of course, you know, given the long distance to have to fly to the U.S., you made a great use of your time, and you found yourself in the town of my birth, Cleveland, Ohio. And yeah, very, very cool. Well, you know, even though you're my first guest from Australia, David, we actually have many, 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 many listeners, actually thousands of listeners from Australia, and very excited to have your voice and have your expertise on the show. In fact, I thought about this, kind of interesting. In the last four or five shows, if you're a regular listener to the Thriving Dentist Show, you know this, but in the last four or five shows, we've had some really great guests and some really great accents. So I had Dr. Bill Williams from the Atlanta, Georgia area. And David, if you know any doctors from Atlanta, they have a unique accent from Atlanta. I had my great friend Chris Barrow from the UK. He's actually from Manchester in the UK. And of course, that has a unique accent as well. And then I had my friend Bob Fraser from Austin, Texas. And David, you know the Texans have a particular way of talking. And now we have you, David, from Australia. So this is there's some wonderful dialects. There's some wonderful. We all speak the same language, but it sounds different. Isn't that cool?
It's cool, Gary. And I was just thinking, you may need to have translators soon if you keep with all these strange dialects. You know, Texans and Manchester. My goodness, that's a strong accent.
Yeah, strong accent. And you know, I think when listeners listen to it, they may you know, they can even slow it down at, you know, half speed to maybe pick it up. You know, pick up all the dialect. But hey, anyway, David, it is just so exciting to have you on the show. We are going to talk about some really cool things. One of the, you know, there's two requirements to be on the Thriving Dentist Show, and you meet both of these in abundance, David. But the two requirements are, number one, you've got to be an authority. And goodness, David, you are an absolute authority. I'm going to brag on you in just a minute, but you're an authority. And then secondly, you have to be passionate about your subject matter. And it is very fair to say that you meet both of those qualifications in abundance.
Thanks, Gary. And, you know, I only know one speed, and that's full speed ahead. So,
understood.
Whatever I do, I just, you know, get that ball under my arm, and I'm like Forrest Gump. I just keep running.
Hey, let me make an attempt at giving the listeners a bit of your background. And then would you keep me honest and then perhaps expand a little bit on it? So if any of our listeners are not familiar with you, they'll know a little bit about you. Does that sound fair?
Sounds fair.
Hey, let me, if you are a new listener to Thriving Dentist Show, it's likely that you already know David Moffat. David is internationally known. However, if he has somehow not landed on your radar screen, I'm really happy to introduce him to you. First of all, David was a practicing dentist, owning his own practice for over 32 years. He sold that practice in 2007. In fact, that practice, you developed it very uniquely. We're going to talk about that today. But you've developed a very, very, very productive practice. And in fact, approaching $2 million a year in production, working about 4 days a week, but working about 38 weeks a year. Did I get the statistics generally accurate there, David?
Pretty close, Gary, except those were the figures for me only. In 2010, 2011, I think, with two assistant dentists and a couple of visiting specialists and three hygienists, our figures were around the $3.4 million mark for 2011. So it was a very good practice, and not in a ritzy part of Sydney at all. In a working class part of Sydney, with people with average jobs and average homes and average incomes, it certainly wasn't the Beverly Hills area of Sydney.
Was this the Cleveland of Sydney?
You could say that.
I can say that because I was born there. You know, in fact, both of the teams in the NBA Finals this year are very much blue-collar communities. When you think of Oakland, California, and think of Cleveland, Ohio, those are blue-collar, working-class, I call them lunch-pail-carrying communities. And it sounds like that was, perhaps you'd use different descriptives, David, but perhaps that lunch-pail, blue-collar, working-class kind of community kind of characterizes somewhat your location. Is that correct?
Yeah, that'd be correct, Gary.
Ah, neat. Well, impressive. Very, very impressive. If I can continue the story, so you sold your practice in 2007. In fact, I might add, at a very handsome return, you sold the practice. You continued to work by contract for a period of time from the folks that bought it. And then in 2012, you really decided to extend your next career into helping your colleagues. And you've done a lot of writing and speaking and helping guide your colleagues to develop successful practices. Did I do any justice at all to your background?
You did a pretty good job there, Gary, and you're right. My contract with the purchasers was to stay on for 5 years, which I did, and then I stayed on again in a 3-day-a-week capacity for another 2 years, and I finished up with them in December last year. And in that 2 years, 2013, 2014, that's when I started to develop my writing and my consulting and my speaking profession, I guess, that all three go hand in hand.
Sure.
Just explaining what I did, which is how I built my practice and the principles that I used to build that practice.
One of the really cool things that I know about your practice is in our discussions and in your writing, you develop your own unique way to practice that provided a lot of fulfillment for you. I think it's fair to say you had a good time practicing. Is that accurate?
Well, I did and I didn't. It's funny you should say that, Gary, because on the profile that you've just given, it would sound like I had a very successful practice for the time that I had it, since I purchased it in 1987. But it wasn't always that way. In 1996, I had tried to sell my practice. I was a little bit bored, I think, with dentistry.
Sure.
And I was looking for other things, and I tried to sell my practice but was unable to sell it for $160,000. And I had three dentists come and look at that practice, among others, who actually set up or bought other practices in my town. And so in the frustration of not being able to sell, I then was approached by a friend in dentistry who had a practice 30 miles away, and he suggested that he could consult with me and help me to build the practice up and work it part-time but still build it up. And so I took him in as a consultant, but after 6 months of working with him, I found out that he was also working as a dentist 900 yards down the road from me with one of my direct competitors. So there was an immediate conflict of interest. He was
sure.
Using the information that he was getting from me and using that against me. And so that relationship ended. And so we're now into 1997, and I had to come home and tell my wife, my wife and I had a 1-year-old and a 4-year-old. I had to come home and tell her that we needed to sell our family home. Because we needed the equity in the home to put that back into the business to turn the dental practice around. So in 1997, we then sold the family home and rented for 5 years. And so it was something that I don't think anybody really wants to do to to a mother and a wife. You know, mm-hmm. they like to be nesters, you know, and have their comfort of their home, but that's what we needed to do. So from 1997 of selling the family home, and then 2007 selling the dental practice for, you know, several million dollars, that was the transformation that really changed my life, and the realization that I then was onto something different.
Well, first of all, thank you for your candor and your honesty in sharing that story. In fact, really, in a summary sense, David, the history of your practice represents two very distinct chapters. An early chapter that was, shall we say, less than fulfilling, and a later chapter that produced some very good results. I'm being simplistic, but is that somewhat accurate?
Yeah, that is, Gary. And I knew I had friends in the medical field in Australia. I sold to what was the first corporate rollout or roll up mm-hmm. of dental practices, and I had medical doctors who I played golf with who had also sold to similar entities in medicine. And so I built my practice with the hope that this was going to happen in dentistry, but never did actually think that it ever would. I thought dentistry was always going to be a cottage industry down mm-hmm. in Australia. So when I received a phone call and then a visit from people who had put this process together, you know, when they sent me the email with the initial purchase price in it, I was actually away from home at a TMJ course, and I opened the email and I was speechless for half an hour just looking at the size of the number.
You thought there might have been a zero misplaced, huh?
Yeah, it was certainly. Yeah,
I'm exaggerating.
You're right, and it was an order of magnitude way above what I thought it was worth. And right. and so, you know, after selling the practice in 2007 and then on contract again, I still continued to build the practice. You know, my personal figures and the figures of the practice grew again for the next 4 years after I'd sold the practice. And it was during that time that I was then traveling to the US and masterminding with some dentists in Chicago. And I met a gentleman from outside of dentistry at one of those meetings who was a guest presenter. And it was kind of like he was the glue that I needed. I knew that I'd build a practice with great service, but his systems from a non-dental field just seemed like a perfect match to fill in the gaps and help me to create the ultimate patient experience, which is, you know, a complete system for the practice in terms of customer service, and something that then provided enjoyment for the staff and team members, and also provided a buy-in mentality for them. And once I put that together, finally as a product in my own practice, I realized that it was a pleasurable experience and something that I could then share with other dentists and their practices as well. That's where that came from.
This is so exciting to me, David, because as many of our listeners know, what I call the new patient experience, what you call the ultimate patient experience, is such a signature part of developing a practice that is enjoyable, not only for the dentist and the team, but also for the patients. So, hey, let's dive into that if we can. One of the things that you are very well known for, David, is that ultimate patient experience. In fact, you often use the acronym UPE, ultimate patient experience. Tell our listeners, first of all, define what the ultimate patient experience is.
Well, Gary, simply put, the ultimate patient experience is looking at your dental practice from the patient's point of view in every step that the patient goes through. Most dental practices and practice manuals and practice management is looking at the patient as being ancillary, and they look at the running of the practice from the staff's point of view, from the dentist's point of view, and then they just put the patient into it. When you view the practice from the patient's point of view and then build the systems back into it to satisfy the patient or the customer, which they really are, then you get a completely different perspective. And sometimes, as you know, dentists being very C-type and they're very particular about the technicalities of dentistry. Sometimes they miss the personal side of dentistry and miss that whole point that there is a brain and a heart and a persona attached to the teeth and the mouth that they're treating. And when you flip it and then look at dentistry from that personal view, you get a whole different viewpoint. And so that's what the ultimate patient experience is. In a nutshell, Gary, it's about closing the leaks in your dental practice that cause patients to leak out for no other reason than they just feel either ignored, they feel that there's apathy coming from the team and the doctor towards them, or that they're confused. And people leaving the practice in droves is a very expensive way to run a dental practice. If you can stop those leaks, keep as many of those patients as you possibly can, then you don't have to be out there hunting for new patients all the time. You've got a pool of a reservoir of these existing patients who come back all the time, trust you. They're happy to take your treatment plans, happy to get it done sooner rather than later, and happy to refer their friends. And that's the essence of what the ultimate patient experience is.
Oh, love it, love it. You know, David, I was fortunate to have a wonderful mentor very early in my career. In fact, as early as 1980, Dr. Omer Reed. And I don't know if you've ever had the chance to hear him speak. He has traveled extensively to Australia and New Zealand. Have you ever had the chance to hear Dr. Reed speak yourself?
You know, Gary, I'm just sitting here with my recently released book in front of me, and Dr. Omer Reed appears in the first line of the introduction in my book.
Well, you know then that the influence he had on me, and Omer taught me from I was green behind the ears. In fact, I was still in college when I started. However, Omer took me under his wing, and what I learned, so many things that I learned from Omer, but one of the things I learned from Omer was that dentistry is a people game, And if we can master, of course, I'm not a clinician, but I know the importance of mastering the clinical aspect of your profession. You have to do good dentistry. However, above and beyond that, we have to master the people side of dentistry. And if you could combine those, then you have a winning formula. And it sounds like Omer had some keen influence on you as well.
Yes, I saw Omer speak in Australia in 2011. He came out and did a private meeting for a small exceptional practice group of dentists, which is a mastermind group of about 20 or 30 dentists who've been meeting since 2002, and I've been a member and an attendee at their annual event for every year. And Omer came out to speak to that group, and it was at that meeting in 2011 where he said that 95% of dentists in the US on reaching the age of 65 have not reached Independence Day. They're still tied to their drill. They're working because they have to, not because they want to. And I fortunately had already reached Independence Day, pretty well before I'd sold my practice, but the practice was cream on top.
The proverbial icing on the cake.
Yes, and that saddened me because we're in a very noble profession that needs, we should be rewarding ourselves as dentists for our study, our investment of time in studying, all those years of studying, the cost of studying, and then the cost of setting up a practice. Now, most dentists, when they come out of university and set up a practice, they're in hock to the bank for between $500,000, $750,000, $1 million. And that's a big investment. And the public need to be aware of that and show a little bit of respect for that investment. And the dentists need to be able to command that respect as well. And building that respect to the profession and investing in yourself and your practice creates a better practice for you, Gary, and allows you to lift your practice up. And this is what I found. The more that my patients felt that I was still communicating with them and being their friend, but they respected that I was a dentist and not a TV repairman or a roofer, then they would happily pay a higher premium for that relationship with somebody who was not putting, I didn't put myself on a pedestal, but what I did do was come down and put my arm around them and build that trust. And with that trust comes the relationship that your customers are happy to pay a little bit more because you have this relationship with them.
You know, I feel like we're, David, that you and I are brothers from a different mother. Well, I need to do a little bit of my genealogy research. I wonder if I have any distant Australian relatives, because when you made the comment that you heard from Omer shared that fewer than 5% of the dentists in the United States had technically reached Independence Day financially at age 65, and how that saddened you. I use a slightly different statistic. May I share my statistic with you, David?
Yeah, sure.
The statistic that I have learned that I use in my courses is, sadly, our association, the American Dental Association, reports that in 2014, fewer than 3% of the dentists in the United States can retire at age 65 without reducing their lifestyle. So that's a slightly different definition, but it's reporting the same occurrence. Would you agree?
Yes.
My reaction to that is just sad. I'm sad. You deserve better than that. And I'm talking to our listeners here. You deserve better than that. It was not easy to, first of all, it was not easy to get accepted in university. It was not easy then to get accepted into dental school. You then had to, had to excel in dental school and graduate, and then you had to pass the boards. And even at that point, you weren't a business owner yet at that point. If you chose to be a business owner, you then had to either buy a practice or start a practice. And all of that requires a great deal of investment, and you deserve to be able to retire with dignity after taking such great care of your patients over all these years. So I have the same reaction. So my comment about feeling like we're brothers from a different mother, it sounds like both you and I have arrived at that sentiment through different roads, but we've arrived at that very same sentiment.
Yeah, and to look at us, we look like twins, Gary.
Well, you know, absolutely. Although I must admit that I'm rather envious of that wonderful head of hair that you have there, David. But hey, let's keep diving into the UPE. So the ultimate patient experience. I'm going to ask you a fundamental question, and it's not obvious. You're going to give us a great answer to this. What does excellent customer service look like? What does that look like? Everyone thinks it's one of those things that everybody thinks they do it, but in fact, the reality might be something different. What does excellent customer service look like?
Well, I think what excellent customer service looks like is that it's not just a series. It's not just the occasional random event. We all do try, you know, to please our patients. You know, we speak nicely. We say thank you. We do the occasional thing. What excellent customer service looks like is really, it's that five-star service that you get, you know, when you stay at the Four Seasons Hotel. It's that same five-star service that you get when you shop at Nordstrom's. Mm-hmm. It's the patients realize that it's not just a random event. They realize, and they realize early on in their visit, that it's a sequential, well-thought-out series of sequential events that that show that this place is different. You know, that this is different from any other dental practice. It's different from most other businesses around. That you are taking and making the effort to be noticeably different. So, you know, what we just at our office, Gary, we encouraged our staff to know when we were expecting patients. You know, we do that. We know they're coming in. We have an appointment book. We know their names. We know whether they're our regular patients.
There's all kinds of clues. There's all kinds of clues, right?
that absolutely. And that's just simple. So when a new patient walks in, our aim is to not have them turn up and they say, "Hi, I'm Mrs. Smith. I'm here for my 2 o'clock appointment." But for us to know, well, we're going to be having somebody come in who we don't know who she is. And if a woman turns up about 2 o'clock or just before, there's a fair chance that that's going to be Mrs. Smith. So our greeter would say, "Hello, Mrs. Smith. My name's Jane. I spoke to you on the phone. Welcome to Active Dental. We've been so looking forward to meeting you and meeting you in person. How's your day been?"
Now, what a difference.
Going to blow Mrs. Smith. It's because she's not expecting it.
What a difference. And you know, again, I think you've characterized this really well. Excellent customer service are a series of, on the surface, what could look like little things. But when you combine them together, they make a massive difference. The simple difference that you just defined, David, of Mrs. Smith coming in at 2 o'clock and announcing herself to the front desk team member, as opposed to the format that you described where your team member recognized her first and says, "Welcome, I'm so glad you're here." That's such it immediately frames the experience different for the patient. Now, David, are you familiar with the acronym? It's a joke, but I like to use the joke that my favorite radio station is WIIFM. Do you happen to know the acronym WIIFM?
What's in it for me, Gary?
What's in it for me? So let's go through a series of what's in it for me. So when I say my favorite radio station is WIIFM, there really isn't a WIIFM. It's an acronym that stands for what's in it for me. David, may I go through and ask you a series of, because there's a number of parties that I want to know what's in it for them when it comes to the new patient experience or the ultimate patient experience, excuse me. Would it be okay if I went through a few of those?
Sure, Gary. Far away.
Okay, so what's in it? You know, what's in it for the team? What's in it for, you know, I always use the word team instead of staff. I like to say staff's an infection. Wait, you spell that different. But what's in it for the team? Let's start there.
Well, in answering that, Gary, I might cover the other sections. The end result of building a dental practice with the ultimate patient experience, you know, world-class customer service, is that you, as I said, you end up with more patients that come more frequently and refer more people. So you end up with a more profitable practice. So for the team, that means job security, job satisfaction, more people to come and work at the practice as well. So a friendlier environment. And I think just knowing that is compared to the opposite of that, which is a dental practice that is not so busy, a dental practice where they wonder whether they're going to get their hours cut, they wonder whether the boss is going to make payroll. You know, those are the two polar ends of it. So a team that then wants to build an ultimate patient experience practice, they also end up with, Gary, sadly, In an ultimate patient experience practice, they end up with a better quality patient as well.
Mm.
They end up with patients who are happier to pay higher fees, and those sort of people make for nicer customers to deal with. So the team end up with a better work environment and a more stable work environment, and also they end up with a happier boss.
By the way,
That's got to be worth something as well. Yeah, a happy boss means more bonuses can be paid.
So when you look at the all the different parties that are involved in the outcome of an ultimate patient experience, there are very specific benefits for the team. There's very specific benefits for the patients. We get better patients. Benefits for our doctors. And it's just win-win-win all the way around, isn't it?
It's a win for everybody. Yeah, it creates a busier practice, and the flow on, as I said, to the doctor, to the team, and then to the patients as well. And it's a different sort of busyness. It's a busyness in better, more productive dentistry as well.
Right.
So yeah, there's no point being busy doing unproductive things. It's better to be busy doing things that give a better financial return, because ultimately, Gary, as you know, you're an owner of a dental practice. Mm-hmm. So the practice has to pay a dividend as well to the owners. Sorry to get off topic a little bit, but
this
is something that I also teach dentists, is that dentists who are owners of practices traditionally file their tax return and say, how much did I make this year? But really, they should be paying themselves a percentage, as if they were paying an associate dentist. They should be paying themselves for the non-clinical time that they're spending on HR, accounting, payroll, and things mm-hmm. like that, and marketing that they do. And then they should be paying themselves a dividend, as if they were an investor, because they have that money. That if they'd have put that money into real estate or into stocks and bonds, they'd be getting a return on it. That money's been tied up in their practice, and they're not giving themselves a return on that either. And so there's a percentage of the practice turnover that they should be returning back to themselves as well.
Oh, I love that. You're absolutely right. And I really appreciate you sharing that perspective with our listeners, because that perspective is so spot on. As a dentist, if you own your practice, you should be receiving two forms of compensation. You should be compensated as a dentist, as David indicated, as you would employing a dentist, an associate dentist in your practice. And then you should also be compensated with a dividend or profit sharing. We can call it different terms, but you should be compensated with a dividend to compensate you for the investment that you have in this practice. And you need to get to the point to do that. And the ultimate patient experience really does lead to that, because as David indicated, it's not just a matter of being busy, but it's being busy. You know, David, let's dive into a detail for just a minute. I'm very transparent. I don't mind sharing information, especially with our listeners. They make an investment in their time. The Thriving Dentist Show is free to our listeners, but it's not free in that our listeners are making an investment in their time, and their time is extremely valuable. I'm going to share a statistic, David, that I'd like you to amplify on. As you developed your ideal practice from 1997 on, and you started to incorporate this new patient experience, one of the things that you benefited from was increasing your hourly production. And if I recall, in the time, you know, right before you sold the practice, and in the time that you worked back, you know, for the practice, your hourly production was well over $1,000 an hour. Is that an accurate fact in terms of your hourly production?
Yes, Gary. In 2007, when I sold the practice, I think my hourly production was just over $1,000 per hour, and then in 2011, you know, so you got 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Then the fifth year after that, my hourly production was $1,350 per hour.
And you can't get to $1,350 an hour by doing low-value services. You simply can't pedal fast enough. I'm not a clinician, but is that an accurate statement, David?
Yeah, you certainly can't. So to set a daily goal, any dentist, Gary, and it's just a matter of working it backwards. So how much do you want to collect in a year? How many days of the year do you want to work? There's your daily collection goal. And then work out your mix. What sort of dentistry do you need to do to make that daily goal? And so there are some things which are nearly the daily goal straight away. You know, a good TMJ case, mm-hmm. paid up front is 2/3 of the way to my daily goal, which was $10,000 a day. The an Invisalign case was 3/4 of the way to that daily goal as well. But then break it down into units of crown and bridge, implant placements, and then fillings on top of that. So you have a mix, but the mix is a balance, so that each day is a balance. One of the things that wears dentists and teams out is having peaks and troughs in their daily production. You know, going from, in my number, imagine going from a $13,000 day to a $2,000 day to a $8,000 day to a $2,000 day back to a $13,000.
So I'm getting dizzy. I'm getting dizzy, David. You just got that roller coaster ride makes me dizzy.
but a lot of dentists don't even plan their right. day or their week in that sort of in that sort of structure, Gary. And you would know. And they don't plan the mix of their day so that you know they're doing the productive things at the best times for the team. Yeah, you know, they create bottlenecks in their instrument flow, in their patient flow, and that just wears the team out. Yeah. When you structure it and you train the patients to be coming to the practice when it suits the practice better, and it's just a matter of education, it creates a better business. And to take that out of dentistry as an example, imagine if you were to be able to go shopping at Nordstrom's with your own private concierge taking you around buying the shoes, the shirts, the slacks, the suits, the sports jackets, the socks, whatever, privately, but not during sale time.
Right.
It would be far more comfortable and far more relaxing. And that's all we're trying to do with organizing our appointment book, our schedule, is to make it relaxing for the patient. No patient wants to come in and to have an appointment for 2 crowns and then find that the doc's in and out all the time doing hygiene checks, doing new patient examinations, you know, adjusting things here and there. You know, those patients with the big ticket items should be then treated like our first class customer at Nordstrom's and have their own private time.
I love it.
Sorry, I'm getting passionate.
I'd love it. I hear it. And, you know, David, you've written a fabulous book, it's titled How to Build the Dental Practice of Your Dreams. And it's subtitled Without Killing Yourself in Less Than 60 Days. I love that title. And it's referred to as the Big Yellow Book. Is that correct? Because the cover, the artwork on the cover is a bright yellow. So it's the Yellow Book. But again, the title is How to Build the Dental Practice of Your Dreams Without Killing Yourself in Less Than 90 Days. Tell us about the book, David.
Well, I guess the book just came about it came about through a non-dental friend of mine who suggested that I had a book in me. And so using the publisher that he used, you know, I sat down and put the book together. And it probably is a mixture of some of my best tips and secrets, Gary, as well as my journey through dentistry as well and in building a good dental practice. If you take the principles in this book, you can turn a dental practice around and point it in the right direction in about 60 days.
And again, you've had the experience of doing that. You've done that.
Yes, and so it's for the reader. There's enough in there to say, I can do this. You know, I'm not destined to keep my dental practice the way it is. I can redirect my practice. I can turn the Titanic around. And well, not from sinking, but I can turn turn an ocean liner around and point it in the way that I want it to go. The nickname, the Big Yellow Book, came from my wife after we had it published and out, and she just thought, well, let's just call it the Big Yellow Book, and she just coined it, I think, in a Facebook post, it stuck, and so it has its own Facebook page. The Big Yellow Book, and it's starting to pop up in odd places on Facebook as well. It's it's appearing on the set of Les Mis, and it's appeared at Sydney Opera House. And
wonderful.
It's got a person. It's almost like a flat Stanley.
Well, I'm going to make a bold statement here. Every one of our listeners on the Thriving Dentist Show needs to read this book. I'm going to put in the show notes. I'm going to put a link to the book. I'll put that in the show notes. So if you're driving your car, don't worry. You don't have to take your hands off the wheel. But the website is www.buildingyourdreampractice.com. www.buildingyourdreampractice.com. I will put that in the show notes. If you're driving, if you're working out, if you're walking on the beach, don't worry, you don't have to take notes. Go back to the show notes, which are available at my website, TACAS, TAKACS, learningcenter.com. If you go to my website, you'll see the show notes, you'll see the interview with David, and then you'll see the links where you can just click on those links and order the book. I strongly recommend this book. There it is, filled with practical information that you can use immediately. I really like the hope that the message of hope that is included in this book, David, and I appreciate your candor and honesty in sharing your own situation. It's not unlike, for our listeners, you recently heard Dr. Bill Williams, me interviewed Dr. Bill Williams in Atlanta. And David, I don't know if you know Bill, but at age 48, he was forced through some external circumstances, he was forced to start over again at age 48 as a dentist. And he started.
Yeah, that'll be tough.
He started from scratch. He did a scratch start at age 48. Not advised, but he did it. And in a 10-year period of time, he grew that practice from scratch at age 48 to a $5 million a year practice in less than 10 years. And so here's two great examples. You know, I recently received an email from a young listener of the Thriving Dentist Show. David, you would appreciate receiving or hearing this email, because he said, Gary, I just want to thank you for introducing me to, he says, I'm early in my career. I'm still trying to figure out what I want to do with this dental degree. I'm working as an associate, making a decent living, but I see myself as a practice owner. Thank you for providing the direction and the examples of those that have been successful before me, because I now know that if they can do it, I can do it. And David, I love that message, because really that is the inherent message in the book, right? The message is that I, meaning Dr. David Moffitt, did it. So if I did it, you can do it. Is that not accurate?
That's true, Gary. And you know, you're reminding me of my story. When I was at Sydney University in my dental class, I traveled the furthest to university each day, apart from the students who came from out of town who lived in the colleges. Each day I traveled further across Sydney. I also came from that working class part of Sydney, and you know, I didn't go to private schools. I just went to public schools, and it was tough to lift up out of that. Mm-hmm. But it was a great opportunity, and dentistry really did become that vehicle for me to express myself more as a business person. But I know that business is about your customers and looking after your customers and making them feel important. And sometimes as dentists, we get so focused on our margins and our compressive strength of our porcelain that we forget that there is a real person there who's going through a whole pile of emotional things. And we're just into the technicalities of their visit without, in inverted commas, visiting with them about their day, about their life, about what's going on in their lives.
Yeah.
And making that connection with the patient, with the customer, really does help to build the business.
It makes all the difference in the world. I'm going to come back and I want to talk about your blog and also about the wonderful report that you've written. But before we do that, we've talked a little bit about, you know, what's in it for the doctor, what's in it for the dentist in developing this ultimate patient experience. But talk a little bit more about how it can lead dentists to allow them to create their own financial destiny. Talk about that, because I think based on the statistics, Obviously, you know, Omer reported that only 5% of the density of the United States hit that freedom point by age 65. And I reported that fewer than 3% could retire at age 65 and not reduce their lifestyle. Based on the result, based on the statistics, it's not happening. So how does this information allow dentists to create their own financial destiny?
Well, I think, Gary, as we mentioned earlier, the separation of income out of the business, a lot of dentists don't even take a salary or a commission on the dentistry that they produce, and they should be, whether they're 35%, 30%, 40%, they should be putting that into a private account and leaving the remainder there in the business, and so they get this.
To define that another way, David, they should pay themselves whatever they would pay an associate with a similar skill set to do the dentistry. That's how I coach my clients. Pay yourself whatever you would pay. It might be 30%. It might be, you know, you could manipulate that number, but it should be whatever you would pay an associate dentist of your caliber to deliver the dentistry if you weren't there.
Exactly, and so they should be separating that, and that should be what they live on, and that should be also, you know, as they're producing more, they should then be segregating out of that money to be put into investment and retirement purposes as well. Not leave it in the business, not
right.
Spend it on big shiny objects. And unfortunately, a lot of dentists fall into that trap, and we all have. I can afford that new machine. And sometimes a new machine doesn't provide a good return on investment, as opposed to investing towards your retirement. There's a lot of dentists out there, Gary, as you know, who are hoping that they can sell their practice and that'll be enough for them to retire on, but certainly won't be put them into that top 3%.
Actually, sadly, David, and this is, I'm just the reporter. Don't shoot the reporter here, guys. But the sad reality is, and I know this, I've physically been in over 2,100 practices as a coach. I physically get to meet about 15,000 dentists a year at my courses. And I have many conversations with these dentists, and I meet many senior dentists whose plan to retire, David, listen to this, their plan to retire is to sell the practice and sell the house. Now, let's just dissect that for just a minute. Let's talk about selling the house. Well, in fact, you may indeed have a lot of equity in your house. David, you sold your house in 1997 for a different reason, but you did it to access the equity in your house, as you shared with our listeners earlier. But can we agree you still have to live somewhere? So you haven't eliminated your housing expense. And then as far as selling the practice is concerned, your practice is a very valuable asset. But my goal would be to have you to reach financial independence independent from the sale of your practice. Count the sale of your practice as gravy on top.
Exactly, Gary. And my personal financial goal has been to live off investments until I put my life expectancy down through family history as 80, and then if I then have written my last check at 80, then I've still got my family home, and then I can sell that then.
Right.
But my aim is always to stay in my family home, and not count that as part of my portfolio. Downsizing to something less comfortable, that's no answer to retirement either. I haven't worked as a dentist to have to do that as well.
Right.
So the principles in the book, the principles in the ultimate patient experience are to help you create a more profitable practice that allows you to then start siphoning. Siphoning is probably not the right word, but taking that extra money and then using that money to invest in your retirement.
Yeah.
And in my case, bring my retirement forward.
Nice, nice. Now, I hope what we've done in this interview, David, is spark interest in our listeners. I know you have done that with me, and I hope we've done that with our listeners. And I hope that this discussion that we're having with David is the beginning of learning much more about this path. And David, you provide some very cool resources. One of those is a blog. Tell us a little bit about your blog.
Well, that's how I really started, I guess, getting some exposure, Gary, and that was to commit myself to writing a blog twice a week. So I write on Tuesday mornings and Friday mornings down under, which equates to Monday afternoon and Thursday afternoon over here
in
the
U.S. Well, that's convenient.
As I was able to say up until the end of 2012, if the Mayans were going to be correct, if you just rang me on that day, which, what was it, the 21st of December, mm-hmm. if you rang me on that day from America and got me on the phone in Australia and I was still there, that meant the Earth hadn't ended because we were already a day ahead.
That's always reassuring. I always, when I just a little trivia, as a family pattern. One of the things we do is watch the ball drop, you know, on Times Square at midnight on December 31st to ring in the new year. However, you guys are way ahead of us. You're already way into the new year, aren't you?
We are.
I know the same thing. I know when I see now because of you know, the internet and social media, when I see you guys celebrating the new year, that I know the world hasn't ended. It's still coming for us.
Yeah, that's the truth. So the Tuesday blog is predominantly, or is, devoted to customer service in dentistry, and then the Friday blog is about the business of dentistry. So you get this distinct two flavors blog.
And they're interlinked, of course, but I love the way that you've kind of do deep dives into each one of those, so that that's a really great synergy between those two topics.
Yes, and I'm very lucky, Gary, in that I write them on the day. They're fresh in my mind on the day, and so, you know, I'll get up early and I'll just pull up a blank Word document and just start typing. Now, sometimes I've got a thought that I've kept. This week, in fact, I had a very small thought, and, you know, start typing, and 1,200 words later, I'm thinking, I've got to wind this up. It's becoming an epic. And I thought it was only a 400 or 500 word article. So
it's funny how
my
that
passion,
works.
Yeah, you know what it's like. My passion. My passion is that once I start typing, I really get into it. And I think I remember in the movie As Good As It Gets with Jack Nicholson, although he wrote romance fiction, those scenes of him writing on the typewriter, that was really when he lost his personality and got into his material. And that's how I feel when I write. So I think I'm coming up to 260 blog posts on that blog page, and that's at, you know, ultimatepatientexperience.com.
Perfect. And again, I'll put that in the show notes. Ultimatepatientexperience.com. I'll put that in the show notes for the links if you're driving and you want to re-access that. Of course, I also want to really encourage you to read the book, because the book will also give you a wonderful foundation for how to start turning your practice around in as little as 60 days. And then again, that's at buildingyourdreampractice.com. And then, David, you've also written a wonderful report. Tell us about that report, and I'll provide the email address for our listeners to access that as well. Tell us about that report.
Well, it's a white paper, 36-page report, Gary, and they can download that. There's a link on the blog page on the right hand side. There's also a link on the blog page right hand side for them to receive the blog in their inbox, in their email account as well, so they can subscribe to the blog rather than having to think, oh, I haven't visited the site for a few days. So that's all there for them. The report, it's a precursor to the book. It's again some more practical tips of things that they can start implementing straight away, as well as discussing in brief my journey through dentistry. And also it's a lead in to, if they're interested, hiring me as a coach or a consultant or a speaker for their groups as well. So
wonderful.
It's a very easy segue into finding more out about me.
Wonderful. Well, David, I want to take a minute and say thank you. I want to thank you, first of all, for taking some time and spending some time with us on the Thriving Dentist Show. More importantly, I want to thank you for all that you do for our wonderful profession. I know that many of our listeners will like to be in touch with you. We provided some different touch points for you on the web. May our readers reach out to you by email as well?
Yes, certainly, Gary. My email address, david@theupe, that's thupe.com. That's the easiest way to get me.
Perfect.
And they're also welcome to, if they wish, find me on Facebook, David Moffett, MOFFET, and friend me on Facebook. And that's how you and I got closer together first up too, Gary.
In fact, I'll put your Facebook link in the show notes as well. So if they want to just one click link to you on Facebook, they can do that as well. As a listener, I have a homework assignment for you. You know, if you're a listener to the Thriving Dentist Show, I got to put you to work. All this information is great, but until you take action on it, it doesn't mean anything. You have to take action on it. And so what I want you to do is I want you to send David an email, and I just want you to thank him. So send him an email. Hey, now listen to this. Now you've got a friend in Australia. I have a friend in Australia. You have a friend in Australia. And if it's been on your bucket list to visit Australia, you've got a friend now in Australia. By the way, Sydney's a pretty cool place, isn't it, David?
It's one of the most beautiful cities in the world. The photos of Sydney Harbour don't do it justice, Gary. And, you know, it's blue skies and fresh air, and it's, you know, the temperature of San Diego, but without the earthquakes.
Hey, when I come to see you, can we go just a little bit farther southwest and happen to hit some of those epic waves?
Certainly. Do you like to surf?
I grew up in I was born in Cleveland, but I moved to San Diego when I was 10 years old. And so I spent my formative years in San Diego, and I was a surf rat. And so surfing Australia is on my bucket list. So, David, if I come visit you, can we take a little side tour down there and hit some epic Australian surf?
Yeah, Sydney's got some great surf beaches. You know, Narrabeen Beach is mentioned in the Beach Boys song.
That's right.
But, of course, Bell's Beach, I think, what was the movie? Point Break?
Point Break, yeah.
Yeah, it finished at Bell's Beach in Victoria, where the waves just come straight in off Antarctica there. And you'll need a wetsuit, Gary.
We needed one in San Diego as well, even though the weather there is about perfect. 64-degree water requires a wetsuit, so I'll bring my wetsuit with me. Well, listen, if you're a listener, please reach out to David. Just send him a quick note. Just thank him. Thank him for being on the show. Thank him for his commitment and connect with him. David is one of those mentors that can help provide some amazing guidance that will make a tremendous difference in your career. That's why I wanted to have him on the Thriving Dentist Show. That's why I wanted to introduce him to you. And I'm excited to have been able to facilitate that. Hey, I have one more request and then we'll wrap here. If you're a listener to the Thriving Dentist Show, take a minute and write us a review on iTunes. We have many reviews on iTunes, but would like to get even a few more because those reviews will help even more dentists find us. And so if you could jump on iTunes and search under the podcast tab, just write in Thriving Dentist Show. And then if you click on the icon of the show, it'll take you to a place where you'll see a spot to write reviews. And if you write reviews, that would be fabulous. By the way, if you don't already subscribe to the Thriving, if you've just stumbled upon it, you can subscribe. While you're there on iTunes, you can subscribe to it. Just like David's blog, you know, if you subscribe to it, that means every week it'll be just delivered to your listening device. You don't have to do anything for that. And so many people prefer to subscribe to it. It's free, but they prefer to do that so they get it regularly. On that basis, David, let me again say thank you. Let me say thanks to our listeners, and I'll look forward to connecting with you all on the next Thriving Dentist Show.
When you cry, be sure to dry your eyes, 'cause better days are sure to come. when you smile, be sure to smile wide. And don't let them know that they have won. And when you walk, walk with pride. Don't show the hurt inside, because the pain will soon be gone. And when you dream, dream big, as big as the ocean blue. When you dream, it might come true. But when you dream, dream big.